Good afternoon, I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for listening to What Mama Wants. Personally, I think Mother Earth wants far less toxics and more health for her planet. This is a chance to hear from educators, citizens, policymakers, and scientists about the role toxics, like mercury, PFAS, and pesticides, are playing in our daily lives. My guest today is Corey Hinton. He's a husband and a father, an attorney at Drummond Woodsum in Portland, Maine, and is a member of the Passamaquoddy tribe at Tsubayak. Welcome to What Mama Wants, Corey.
Thank you for having me, Kate.
It's a pleasure. So your job is to help people solve problems. And recently, you've been working with the Passamaquoddy tribe to solve the longstanding issues of getting access to clean drinking water. Can you summarize for us the problems that tribal members have faced over time with respect to drinking water?
I'd be happy to. Thanks for the question, Kate. At Pleasant Point, which for those that don't know, it's a small community in down east Maine, about as far east as you can go. Going up north on Route 1, up to Calais, you take a right headed towards East Fort, and you'll pass right through Pleasant Point. And it's a small little community sitting on a sort of a rocky alcove right next to the saltwater. And it's been served by a community water supply, a water district that serves two other municipalities in the area. And the current water district replaced a water district that was there before. The current water district was created in 1983 by a law of the state of Maine, a public law. And that law in the sort of preamble says, and it begins with something to the effect of, the current water district, I think it was called the East Fort Water District, poses a threat to public health and safety. The water in 1983 was very, very, very bad. And it had been bad for some time. The water company that was there was failing. The water was totally unreliable. And a new water district was formed. For some period of time, the new water district, it did okay. But over time, we've seen their water supply, the literal body of water, the reservoir, shrink. It's become filled with sand and dirt and silt. And it's fed by a swamp. Essentially, that's its primary source of natural water. So the water has become more and more dirty, filled with runoff from the road and everything that comes into it, including a good amount of animal waste certain times of the year. And so the water supply has gotten dirtier and it's become more challenging to clean as a result. And so what we've seen is that people in this area served by this water district or its predecessor have not had reliable access to clean drinking water for decades. And just over the last 10 years, we've seen that this water district has delivered levels of chloroform in the water supply that are out of compliance with the Safe Drinking Water Act almost 50% of the time over the last 10 years. So this has been a cyclical problem.
So does that chloroform come from a chlorination process in order to clean the water?
That's right. And we've noted in water sampling and testing on the reservation, you can see chloroform levels go up when discoloration in the water goes up. That tends to happen certain times of the year. In particular, this time of year is very, very bad for this. So droughts over the course of the year have reduced the water supply. And so you've got dirtier water, I guess. There's more literal dirt in the water. It will be a very, very dark brown color before it's cleaned. And because it's a dirtier water, they have to add more and more chlorine at this time of year in order to produce, you know, try to produce something that looks clean and clear. And historically speaking, they're unable to do so this time of year to produce clean, clear water. It's often discolored. Oftentimes it may come clear, but it'll smell like chlorine. And there's been reports on and off this time of year for many years of brown water coming through pipes, showering in it. There's dirt on your skin afterwards. Or sometimes it's clear water, and we've had reports of people with burned skin who, you know, are exposed to this water for the first time ever, and their skins are having reactions. So it's pretty scary at times, and we think that a lot of this flows from the cleaning process used for this particularly dirty water.
I think if I lived there, there's just no way I'd drink water out of the tap. But what do you do about staying clean and, you know, water fountains and things like that?
Well, this part of Maine is economically very disadvantaged. And so people can't necessarily afford to buy water. They have no choice, but they're paying for water, right? They're paying for municipal water supply. And the ability to go out and purchase water at the grocery store is not always available. There are no grocery stores within walking distance. There are no grocery stores within 5 miles. For my community at Pleasant Point, you can go to, you know, a grocery store in Eastport. You could go to the Walmart in Callis. You need a car, you need gas money. So people don't always have the choice to drink water from other places. But even if you do, this water is still coming through your pipes, right? So you're typically showering in it. Oftentimes people may still cook with it, not realizing that you can ingest the chloroform in ways other than just drinking it. And if you have small children, you may be bathing your children in this. So it's not as easy as just purchasing bottled water.
Mm-hmm. Well, the chloroform is a toxic. Is that the same as THM?
Chloroform is a natural byproduct of a sort of chlorination cleaning process within municipal water supplies. And it's one of several types of carcinogens that are referred to collectively as THMs or trihalomethanes. Chloroform, which, you know, comes from chlorine, obviously, it tends to be the most toxic of those and the most common in water systems like this, where you have higher need to chlorinate water.
I think it's horrifying that people's skin can get burned just by showering, or I can't even imagine how you bathe your baby then.
There are really sad stories about parents who have children with skin conditions, and the kids don't want to take baths. I have two young children. I don't live on my reservation, but my kids love bath time, right? I think a lot of little kids love bath time, but I hear stories of kids that are petrified of getting in the water. Sometimes I get pictures of bathtubs that parents have filled up and the water's brown. I mean, can you imagine having to put your kid in that? The psychological damage alone to the child, to the parent, it's untold, right? I mean, we can't even begin to quantify the negative psychological impacts of this water on the people. But, you know, the skin conditions we can certainly see. And there are definitely people that leave, they go away, and they come home. And they use the water and they're having a skin condition, or people that don't live there and come, and a little kid visiting the grandparents for the weekend takes a bath and all of a sudden has a really bad skin irritation problem. We've told the water district in the past, we think there's an issue with this and with the chlorine. And we've been told for many years, how could you think that that's, you know, our fault? And they're like, well, you know, like people put chlorine in the water and the water smells like chlorine. So ipso facto, the problem is clearly how the water systems are managed. And it's very sad.
It makes me just go through the thought process of what about using a different water source? Could you drill down and get to a clean aquifer?
A few years ago, the tribe, which owns a lot of land in this area, tried to test an aquifer on tribal lands. We received a federal grant, and the goal was to look at alternate supplies of water. You know, we looked at everything from desalinization to upgrades at the current water system. And there was testing of one groundwater source located on tribal land. And the idea is this would have become a new supply for the water district, which of course serves much more than just the Passamaquoddy tribe. When we started testing the water, there was public outcry about the tribe using the water on its land, and the local town passed a ban and banned the tribe from testing, from pumping for water on its land. And so we tried actually to secure a safe groundwater source, and we were explicitly blocked by a discriminatory law passed by the town of Perry.
That's shocking in and of itself.
Yep.
But just this year, there have been some positive actions on the waterfront. Can you explain what's happening now with Pleasant Point, or based on the new provisions?
I'd be happy to. Well, there's been some things in the works for quite a while. When I was asked by the tribal chief in 2019 to start working on this issue, we started meeting internally on a weekly basis and started meeting externally with local stakeholders, federal and state stakeholders. And we've been doing this for a couple of years now and looking at short, medium, long-term solutions. Shorter-term solutions included putting new wells online within the community, wells that had access to safe drinking water, groundwater. And just in the last couple of weeks, we completed a new well. It's an electric well pump in a heated structure that's got a nice turnaround. It's right next to the reservation. So people will be able to fill up from an on-reservation water supply without the need to drive to a grocery store. Many people will go to other unregulated wells in the area to get water. So we're very excited about this place. We call it Zamagwanagook in our language. It means a place where the water flows. And so we're really happy about that. That was one of our primary short-term solutions that we needed to get in place just to alleviate the immediate need for drinking water. Of course, it still to get a well licensed and constructed, it took some time, but we're happy about that. Also in the last month or so, there was about $1 million upgrade to the water system itself for the whole community, which is largely financed by the tribe and a tribal public health entity called Wabanaki Public Health and Wellness. The state of Maine also chipped in funds for this. And this is a polishing treatment that is cleaning the water supply to an even greater degree than it's already been cleaned in the ordinary course using carbon filters. And those are supposed to, on a more medium-term basis, these are filters that wear out and have to be replaced, but this is supposed to clean out residual dirt and chloroform that is in the water after it's gone through the regular cleaning process. We're hopeful that that will help, while longer-term plans can be evaluated for an alternate water supply. And those longer-term plans are now possible because of the enactment of LD 906, which was an act to provide the Passamaquoddy people with clean drinking water. That was signed into law earlier this year after a pretty contentious debate in the legislature. And in particular, that would let the tribe take these places where it has water, that it knows that it has water, and put it into a protected status. So Zamagwanagook will go into a protected federal status, so it can never be taken away by the state of Maine or a local town. It won't become subject to moratoriums on water use and water drilling, which has been a block to evaluating water sources locally here. And then the other site that we're going to be putting into trust under this law is the location where the larger groundwater source is that we tried to test before. So the plan is hopefully in the long term to put that land in a protected status and it'll be available to evaluate for a future water supply for the whole area. And then perhaps more significantly, this law changed the Maine Indian Claim Settlement Act to give the Passamaquoddy tribe legal authority to regulate drinking water on its lands. After decades of being under state jurisdiction under drinking water and getting brown water for far too long, the tribe said, we've had enough. We will work with the EPA. We will take care of our water issues on our own. Thank you very much, state of Maine. And so that was the third component of this law. And then also significantly, this law eliminated the tax burden on the local non-tribally owned water district. It was the only water district in the state of Maine that paid property taxes. Don't know why, but that's how it was created. So we amended state law to eliminate their need to pay property taxes, and that those savings will directly cover the cost of changing the filter in the upgraded water system. So the Passamaquoddy tribe took that on. We did 100% of the lobbying alongside with the Wabanaki Alliance. We worked through objections of the governor. We worked through objections of the local towns, which didn't want to lose tax revenue and were worried about the tribe using its water. And that's now law in Maine.
Congratulations. That's really big stuff.
Thank you.
It's a wonderful ending to a really long and arduous struggle.
Not an ending, though. Just the beginning, we say.
Good.
I mean, just seriously, the law, it took like 60 or 90 days to take effect. And that was the end of the summer. And now we have to implement this law, right? And protect the lands and continuing to work with all the stakeholders to keep the water clean.
Right. Do you have any insights into why the problem with an issue as fundamental as clean drinking water has taken so long to correct?
Sure. I think that there's a certain profile for a rural water district that makes it just, you know, kind of hard to begin with. A lot of rural water districts across the country, there's a couple in Maine that struggle with this, including the Passamaquoddy Water District and Mars Hill, I believe, is another water district. You know, these rural water districts with low subscribership, meaning not that many paying customers, tend to have a harder time maintaining their infrastructure, maintaining staffing levels, bringing in the resources that are necessary to keep a drinking water system compliant with state and federal law. This water district has struggled probably as much, if not more, than any water district in Maine over several decades. And I think the data definitely bears that out. What's unique about this district, though, is that it was created with one less tool in its toolbox. As I mentioned before, all other water districts in the state, as like a matter of historical practice, they don't pay property taxes. And it's because they're public utilities that are providing a very important public service, right? Clean drinking water in, you know, municipalities. This water district was created as the only one that still had that tax burden. The water district was created under state law, but it was created, the first infusion of money to build the water district itself came from the Passamaquoddy tribe. The tribe put up money to essentially start the water district. The tribe had just completed the land claim settlement. And so there was money that came in from the United States to reacquire illegally taken tribal lands. And some of that money was used to ensure clean water supply and to essentially pay for and start a new water district that would then be a public utility. I think because this was a water district that, first of all, it's not tribally owned, but it's called the Passamaquoddy Water District. I think because it was named for the tribe, because it was started with an infusion of tribal dollars, it was deemed okay for it to have a sort of unequal playing field relative to other water districts, you know, those property taxes. We started this process with the water district. We were told they didn't even have money to meet with us. They didn't even have time. They couldn't dedicate resources to meet with tribal leaders in the largest block of their customer base. Crazy. So money has been a huge issue for them. And lo and behold, they paid out significant sums of money every year to these other municipalities when other water districts don't. So I do think that at the core of the creation of this, there was a thought that this water district will be treated differently. And as far as the regulatory side goes, I don't care what anybody says, the state of Maine watched this water district flounder for many, many, many years and did nothing about it. And, you know, whether it's be called the Passamaquoddy Water District or not, you know, I don't know, but it started with one less tool in the toolbox and it essentially failed for a while. And it's taken a very active effort by the Passamaquoddy tribe to get the state of Maine to listen to us. And the EPA's had our back the whole time. So there's a much greater scrutiny of the state's management of this water district now than there ever has been before.
If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to What Mama Wants, less toxics and more health. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Corey Hinton, a lawyer at Drummond Woodsum, who's the leader of the firm's Tribal Nations Practice Group. He advises tribal nations on employment matters, economic development, environmental and natural resource issues, and the fee to trust process, among many other legal matters. As a Passamaquoddy citizen yourself, you bring an invaluable perspective to the work you're doing. You've demonstrated your commitment to serving Indigenous and underserved communities all around the country. What are you seeing lately regarding environmental justice and social justice issues related to toxics?
I think that our society is grappling with climate change and grappling with, I think, a very real sense that our natural environment is suffering because there are things happening in our atmosphere that may or may not all be related to how humans have treated the earth. But in one way or another, our earth is less clean and more unsafe. And I think, quite frankly, more angry than it was, at least in my life. You know, the discussion about PFAS and the discussion around need to have a greater focus on the inputs into our products that we use, it has been a really fascinating and alarming conversation. But it's just sort of like the latest tip of the spear, right? I mean, for many, many years, people have been saying, at least where I come from, the earth is, you're cutting off, if you cut all the trees and if you take all the fish and if you shoot all the deer and the moose, there's not going to be food left. If you put buildings in every square inch of the earth, there'll be no place left to grow food. Now, I can go to the records in the Maine state legislature, and there are Passamaquoddy leaders who have been saying this in Augusta since the 1870s. We have been saying for far too long that the way that the United States of America, and quite frankly, Europeans have treated this place is a travesty. And now people are realizing, oh, you know, there was a protest at a pipeline. It got an international news. Oh, let's start tuning in. Newsflash, people, we've been saying this for far too long. Multiple generations of my people have been saying that this earth has been abused for greed and capitalistic ends that really have served no good other than short-term immediate economic release. for a very, very select few. So I'm glad that people are tuning in to the need to protect Earth now, to protect our mother. Let's just hope it's not too late.
Mm-hmm. So, magic wand question. What do you think Mother Earth wants in the big picture with regard to water specifically going forward?
There need to be less toxic inputs into our natural environment, period. I mean, this is hard, but, you know, there's so much push for development and deforestation in the name of commercialization. And that's not going to lead to the long-term health of our planet. Natural places need to be allowed to regrow, where dams have stopped waters from flowing and where mills have dumped chemicals into waterways. Those things must go. And we don't need paper like we did before, right? You know, the paper mills that have been choking and killing our waterways must go. They've for far too long destroyed our habitats, and the need to continue to create wealth in this world is probably going to be the greatest downfall of the natural environment. So we need to figure out ways to wean ourselves out of the need for more growth, more profit every single year.
Yeah, that's such a fallacy, isn't it? I've always questioned that you're either growing or dying as a business concept. How can that be? What about sustenance?
I certainly find it to be contrary to like a natural way of being, but you know, it doesn't really matter what I think in the grand scheme of things.
Well, I think it does. Say, Corey, to close our interview, I'd like to ask you a few quick questions about your personal relationship with the Earth, if you're game.
Sure.
Yeah. So as a kid, what did you like to do outside?
I grew up in a family where hunting and fishing was a very, very important way of life. And that was on one side of my family. And on the other side of the family, I had a grandmother in particular who famously in Westchester County went toe-to-toe with Donald Trump over cutting trees to build a golf course. And so I grew up influenced by people that had just tremendous respect for the earth, you know, for trees, for water, and for the things that thrive in the forest and in the waters that sustain us, the fish and the game. I grew up hunting and fishing, and those times in the woods with my dad had just immeasurable impacts on me as a human and as the person that I am today.
That's sweet. Can you describe a scene from nature where you have felt awe?
Yeah, I climbed Katahdin on Friday, which
oh,
I know.
Oh, picture.
Yeah. Someone in my office printed up for me when I came in. I climbed Katahdin on Friday, and it was one of the most jaw-dropping moments and places that I've ever been in my life. My friend was finishing a through hike and asked me to finish Katahdin with him, and I carried up tobacco to leave the top of the mountain. It's our medicine and as an offering, and the colors are just peak right now up there, and the weather was just no clouds.
Your picture was bright blue and there was one furry guy. I'm guessing he's the through hiker.
Right? He's been on the trail for a while. Oh. But it was just so beautiful. And you could see forever, it felt like. You know, I felt like I was looking into the ocean from where I was because it just was endless blue into the horizon. That was just a very, very inspiring moment and very humble. You know, so hard to get up there. And then to get back down, it was even harder.
it's hard on the knees.
Yeah.
What's one thing you currently wonder about in nature? Something like, how does that work? Or where do they come from?
It's interesting. I was talking to my buddy about this, the trail the other day, and I'm always struck by what you can't see. Trees, you know, they're great. I love trees, but what I love even more is like the roots and where do the roots go? And when you're in these old forests that are really healthy and old, a lot of times, right, you'll see trees, but it's not like, you know, lots and lots and lots of trees. Sometimes the trees may be spaced out, right, in a mature forest. And you realize like the genius of the forest is what's actually in the ground. And you can walk in these places where you see some roots on the surface, but like they're really all deeper. And so I think about that sort of stuff.
That's kind of a perfect answer for a lawyer. You know, you look at the laws that hold the trees in. It's awesome. And finally, what's your favorite baby animal?
I love puppies. I grew up a dog person and I've got a Great Pyrenees. And he was just like the cutest polar bear fluff ball. I'm sure there are many, many cute animals out there, right? But I just love a good puppy.
Yeah. Who can resist? Yeah. Corey, you are tenacious. You just keep showing up, even in the face of racism and ugly ignorance. You make sure people's fundamental human rights to clean drinking water are met. Congratulations on the successful work you've done to enact the clean drinking water legislation so future generations can feel comfortable taking baths, drinking from their home taps and school water fountains. You've had a huge win, and thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you so much, Kate. Really appreciate you having me on your show.